Oh, nice. All right. Good. Everybody has a seat?
Yeah, there's.
Is it the cable or is it? It could be the cable.
Fingers crossed.
Well, if you move slides, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're good, Karen. We're good.
Thank you. So, yep, hello everyone. I'm Matt Graham. I'm a research data scientist at the UCL Center for Advanced Research Computing. And today I'm going to be giving you a whirlwind tour of accelerated and differentiable scientific computing with JAX. So just to begin with an overview of what JAX is. So it's a Python library, which is perhaps best well known for its use in kind of large-scale machine learning and artificial intelligence contexts, but it's actually also kind of used in a sort of broader scientific computing, high-performance numerical computing context, and that's what we're concentrating on here. It started out as a research project in Google Brain by a group including some of the key contributors to the Python AutoGrad package and the XLA kind of compiler project. The initial version of JAX was described in a 2018 SysML conference paper, and there was an associated open source release under an Apache 2.0 license on GitHub in October 2018. Since that point, it's had seen widespread adoption in both machine learning and scientific computing contexts, and there's a sort of large and vibrant open source community that's developed around it, and in particular quite a kind of a varied downstream package ecosystem building various functionality on top of it. So just to kind of give some of the key features that JAX offers, so I would say one of the sort of standout features is if you're already familiar with the NumPy kind of way of coding up problems and with the scientific Python ecosystem, there's a very kind of shallow learning curve to getting up and running with JAX. It offers a almost drop-in NumPy API replacement that you can directly use in place of NumPy. But the real power of JAX comes from these composable function transformations that it offers for doing things like just-in-time compilation, automatic differentiation, automated vectorization, and parallelization. Under the hood, it allows you running across both CPUs, but also accelerated devices, such as graphics processing units and Google's tensor processing units. So just to kind of give a bit of context why I'm talking about JAX, so my main experience is from developing downstream packages that build on top of it. So I'm not going to have much time to talk about these today, but if you're interested and come want to chat to me afterwayswI work on a package for approximate Bayesian inference, which builds upon JAX's differentiability, and another one for kind of doing spherical harmonic transforms in sort of a space and earth sciences context. So how is JAX actually structured? At the top, it's the actual kind of JAX Python package and its public API, which exposes both these functional transforms that I'll talk a little bit about, various kind of numerical modules for kind of building your functions on top of, and there's also a really relatively well-developed kind of series of APIs for providing extensions on top of JAX. The sort of internals underneath that, and one of the key components of that is JAXlib, which is the sort of Python wrappers around the binary components of JAX, which is separated from the sort of pure Python JAX package. Alongside that, there are some vendor-specific plugins for some of the multi-device support. Underneath all of that, JAX basically builds along on top of the kind of OpenXLA compiler infrastructure, uses the stable HLO MLR dialect for the kind of communication between the Python package and the XLA compiler toolchain, and that's what gives you this kind of device-agnostic behavior. So just to kind of flag that from more recent versions of JAX and indeed NumPy, there's support for what's called the Python Array API standard, which allows you to write code which is portable across different array backends. So this would look something like, rather than importing NumPy as NP, you would take your array namespace from one of your array arguments using this special dunder array namespace method, and then define your numerical operations in terms of that. And this gives you the advantage of if you pass in a JAX array, you will dispatch to the JAX operations, but if you pass in a NumPy array, you will dispatch to the NumPy operations. So I've mentioned JAX has these functional transformations, just to dig into a little bit how they actually work, and in particular the just-in-time compilation transformation. So JAX transforms work by tracing a function with these kind of abstract arguments that represent the specific shapes and types of the arguments, and trace all of the different numerical operations that apply to those. For particularly the just-in-time compilation, the output of that tracing is an internal intermediate representation called a JAXper, short for a JAX expression. There are then a series of lowering rules defined to translate those numerical primitives that you've traced out in the JAXper to operations in the stable HLO MLR dialect, which is then what is passed to the XLA compilers, executable compiled, wrapped as a new Python function, and executed in the function's outputs returned, and the executable cached so that we don't hit that kind of compiler overhead on subsequent function invocations. So in code, what does this look like? If we have some Python function, we apply our jax.jit transform, we get a new function out, and then we would expect, if we evaluate that on some array argument, we will get numerically equivalent outputs, but for larger functions, we would have a performance gain from the sort of jitted version once we amortize the cost of compilation. So as well as just-in-time compilation, one of the other key features that JAX provides is automatic differentiation. So one of the sort of most basic instantiations of this is the JAX.grad transform. So this takes a scalar-valued function, produces a function which computes the gradient with respect to any array arguments. So if we had applied to that to the simple example we quoted up earlier, rather than getting a scalar out, now we're getting an array that represents the derivatives with respect to each of the elements. And just to kind of flag, because this is using a sort of efficient reverse mode automatic differentiation implementation, the gradients are actually cost a similar kind of constant overhead factor from just evaluating the function itself.